What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Whole Home Podcast. I am the asker of questions, Laura Letario, and I bring to you tonight or day, whenever you might be listening, another wonderful lady, the lovely Hannah Gross. Hi, Hannah.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, Hannah, we are 23 ladies in, and by this point, I think it is more than safe to say that we have seen God's hand all over the place in the stories shared and tales told and prayers prayed. Do you listen to the podcast?
I do. It's been really lovely to, I mean, like you say in the intro, it's about the sameness and the differences. And it's been very cool to listen to the stories of the ladies in our church and be like, oh, I'm like that.
Yeah.
Fun.
I do that myself all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah. Something else I love about the podcast is that even if it is nerve-wracking, it is like leaving a permanent mark in history that someone can come across someday, like an old letter that is evidence of a life lived not to be forgotten. I think it is powerful to think that if anyone in the future, even far future, were to come across this little time capsule of the lives of remnant women, they will hear story after story of God's presence, provision, power, healing, redemption, care, and so much more. And I know that we're going to hear more of that from you tonight. So I thank you for daring to come on and visit with me and share. And before we get started, I hope to encourage you, Hannah, with some thoughts that my family thinks about you.
Aww.
First of all, we love you.
Thanks.
And you are a treasure, my words. You are a rock, Ryan's words. You are the kind of person who selflessly loves with enduring loyalty and kindness. Kind of friend you expect to have your whole life. A true sister in Christ. You are humble and a talented woman who shows the love of Christ through your persistent care of those around you. And if you know Hannah at all, you can expect to sing with her and laugh with her. And if you don't know Hannah, scoop her up and let the laughs and songs begin.
I do love both of those things.
Dun, dun, dun. And that's all I have. So
awesome. Well, I've held on to my tears so far. We'll see how long it lasts.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Hannah, what's next? What do I do? I normally... Okay, your background, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where did you grow up, Hannah?
Oh, man. So, for my notes for this section, I wrote down just a list of places, because I grew up in the military. My dad was in the Army. He joined the Army, let's see, before I was born. So, I don't remember this part, but...
Yeah.
He went to the United States Military Academy after being enlisted as a Russian linguist in the Whoa. 80s, which is a wild time to be a Russian linguist, or so I'm told.
Say anything. Go.
Спасибо. Хорошо.
Oh, my
no,
goodness.
No, shoot.
Amazing.
I studied Russian a little bit with my dad in high school. Didn't go super well. You know, a combination of both of us being a little bit busy and a little bit absent-minded.
Mm-hmm.
But I can sound out most Russian words, which is cool.
Amazing.
Yeah. But anyway, defense languages to the military academy, and... he met my mom there, and they got married on graduation day, because you're not allowed to get married while you're at West Point. As a cadet, you're not allowed to change your dependent status, so you can you can get married afterwards.
So no time like the very
no
day.
No time like the day of graduation at the West Point Chapel. Okay. And they only had a short window because there was other cadets who also wanted to get married at the West Point Chapel.
Wow.
Yeah. So I grew up moving around a lot. I was born in Missouri at Fort Leonard Wood. And from what I don't remember this part, but from what I'm told, it's a very boring place. Mm-hmm. It's nicknamed Fort Lost in the Woods because there's nothing there but woods.
Was your dad actually around, or was he gone at the time?
He was around. He was there for a one of the schools that you go through in the Army as you're advancing. So he was there. And then we moved to Alabama, and I think I have my earliest memories there. I remember a swing set and our black dog. We had a dog named Sasha. And then we moved to Germany. And we moved after Alabama was Germany.
Obviously.
Obviously. Clear path. You know how it goes. and then I've got Landstuhl, and that's where my brother Justin was born. And then we moved to Bamberg, also in Germany.
How old are you now?
Gosh, in Bamberg, I must be 4.
Okay, wow.
I remember a little bit, but not a lot. Me and Jake, my older brother, went to German kindergarten. And I remember... I hated German kindergarten.
Okay.
I hated it. The ladies who were teachers, they knew English. They spoke perfect English to my parents.
Mm-hmm.
They would not speak English to us because part of the point was that we were supposed to be learning some German.
Right.
And the children...
You're so little.
So little. I was so little. We were supposed to be learning German, but there was a little girl who had a crush on my brother.
Okay.
And so she would translate for him, nice. But not for me. So I didn't like German kindergarten because I couldn't understand what was going on. But I did like the Nutella sandwiches they would give us for lunch. Okay. That was great.
Man, I'm going to have to get back to that. But how long did you stay there?
Germany?
Yeah.
Let's see. So.
Was this for more training?
No. So my dad was an engineer in the Army. And so he was stationed there as part of an engineering job that I don't remember a ton about because I was a tiny child. Mm-hmm. I remember, let's see, during that time he was deployed to Kosovo. That's all I know about what he was doing in Germany. Okay. Yeah.
So did you stay there several years?
Several years, okay. Yeah. I think 3 years total. Yeah. So okay. While we were in Germany, 9/11 happened. So the trip back to the States was much more stressful and difficult than our trip to Germany. Mm-hmm. Airport security was insane. And things changed on military bases also after 9/11. Increased checks under cars for bombs and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. which was interesting.
As a kid, did you know all this stuff? Were you afraid?
No, I wasn't afraid. I was so young mm-hmm. that in some ways this is just a new thing. Okay, there's tons of new things coming into my life all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when I got glasses and could see the moon. Like, sometimes new things just happen.
Yeah. What did you used to think it was?
I don't think I had any thoughts about it. I got glasses when I was 2, almost 3.
Okay.
When I had glasses, we went outside and I looked up at the sky and I turned to my dad and I was like, Dad, it's the moon. And he's like, I'm so glad we got this child glasses.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So was there any, before you move on to Florida, anything else in Germany? What was the culture like there? Did it shape you in any way?
I think, well, so I loved the castles and I loved the crepes. They had crepe carts on the street. And I remember seeing jugglers in some of the towns we were in. But I think in terms of shaping me specifically, I think it was the toys and the playgrounds and how well-built everything was.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because culturally, we were still Americans. We were living on an American military base, interacting with mostly Americans. I mean, going to German kindergarten and going out on Volksmarches to the castles and stuff was a little bit of interaction with German culture, but I was so young. Mm-hmm. But I remember everything being made of wood and everything being very much intentional and well done.
Yeah.
Which isn't always the case, specifically with toys and playgrounds in the United States.
Yeah. I'll say that will probably play into your life later.
This is a surprise tool that will help us later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Florida.
Florida.
Yep. The Gators.
Gators. Go Gators. my dad went to master's school to the University of Florida in Gainesville. So we lived there for 2 years and change. And that's where my sister Holly was born. Went to my first sporting event. My dad took me to a University of Florida football game when I was 5, I guess. Yeah, it would have been 5 or 6. And that was fun. We stayed up past midnight and then we had to leave before the game was even over.
Oh, man.
So I don't know how it ended, but it was really fun to spend time with my dad. So he was getting his master's in environmental engineering.
Okay.
And so he was studying water and how water moves and flows and affects things around it. And specifically his thesis project, I think, was a competition with other master's students to figure out a water filtration system that could potentially go to Mars with the astronauts, which was really cool. We got to go in
that is cool.
into the lab with him and watch him like, here's the blue dye. We got to make sure that there's no blue dye over here because, you know, when you're up in space, you have a closed system. So depending on how long your trip is and how much fuel you want to use to get your system off the ground, you have to make choices on what you bring.
Right.
And water is really heavy.
Okay.
So the goal was basically to be able to recycle water and have it be sanitary.
Okay. I totally saw something at the Science Museum where they were doing that with the toilet water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's a little gnarly.
Okay, Florida.
Florida, yep. We lived close to the Kennedy Space Center, which was really cool.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. I don't think we actually watched a launch, but we watched a 3D movie of a launch, mm-hmm. which was really cool. And that's when I learned that I wanted to be an astronaut.
Okay.
And a zookeeper. I was five, so
and
I was
how
like,
did those two
I can be both.
Go hand in hand?
Animals should be in space. I assumed at the time.
Yeah.
As an adult now, I'm like, animals should absolutely not be in space. At least not all of them.
Do you know which animals have been sent to space? Okay, monkey, obviously.
Off the top of my head, monkey and dog, I believe.
Okay, dog.
Because I think the dog the Russians sent to orbit, I think her name was Laika, but I'm not sure. But yeah, monkey and dog.
Okay. And then where are you going to school?
I was homeschooled.
Okay.
So,
yeah, did your mom work? I forgot to ask you that.
No, totally. My mom was a registered dietitian. So when we were in Germany, I believe she was still a dietitian and we were going to German kindergarten. And then by the time we were in Florida, she and my dad had decided that we were going to be homeschooled. My mom wanted to spend time with us. She was like, I don't like the idea that some other lady gets to be the person who spends all this time with my kids. I love my kids. I want to be around them. And then part of it, I think there was a situation that happened when they tried to send Jake to school and they were like, we're not getting down with that. Homeschool it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I was super excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Florida, let's see, five.
So jammies and all the things?
No, actually, initially they were like, we're doing a school uniform.
Oh.
And we're doing school picture day on the first day of school. that
like collared shirts kind of thing?
Yeah.
Or like just
yeah, like collared
shirts
and skirt for me, and then khakis and collared shirts for the boys, I think. And that lasted not even a week. But no, we actually were very rarely allowed to do school in our pajamas.
It's a good rule. I kind of have the same one. It helps. You know?
It does. It does. It's important to have a focus uniform, I guess. Mm-hmm. And pajamas cannot be your focus uniform or you won't be able to rest.
Yeah.
It's your rest uniform.
That's right. Uniform. Okay.
Yeah. So if there was a uniform, it was being dressed.
Okay. So what kind of house did you live in there?
In Florida, we were not on base. My dad was attending school. We weren't assigned to a military installation. So we were in a house. I think it was a duplex in like a little community in Florida that they had. There was a pool that was shaped like a snowman, which is a silly pool shape, I know, but spent a lot of time there. That's probably the tannest that I've ever been.
I was going to say, do you tan well?
No. Well, I do, but it has to be really slow or I'll just burn and peel.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be outside for hours every day and applying lots of sunscreen.
Yeah.
But if I do that, then I tan really nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the kind of thing where your mom could just send you all outside and go swim or she had to watch out?
No, I was five.
Oh, you're still five. Okay.
Yeah.
We're still five.
My older brother was seven and then Justin was three and Holly was an infant. So
okay.
No, so we would go to the pool and she would teach us how to swim and I had floaties and Jake was mostly able to swim or walk because it wasn't a very deep pool.
Mm-hmm.
And then Justin was in his little circle floaty thing and she would just hold Holly and we would just play in the pool or go on walks. I remember we went on a walk with my dad through a swamp so he could show us some trees that had fallen over because the water had eroded their roots. It was like a science walk or something. I don't really remember, but
mm-hmm.
Holly was 1.5 maybe, and there was a gator 13 feet long, I think.
Okay.
Around that length. Yeah, just off the path. My mom's like, Chris, my dad's like, don't worry, it's fine. We're not going to feed the gators. And I was,
what happened?
It was fine. We walked past it. It didn't move. It didn't
Whoa,
eat my sister.
Creepy.
Yeah. It was really cool.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I could tell stories
Aren't
about
they fast,
all day.
Though?
They are, but they don't, like,
they have to be hungry.
Yeah. If they're not used to being fed by people, they usually won't approach people.
Okay.
So as long as you don't give them the idea that they can get food from you. Like, you don't want to be in the water around gators because then they might see you as food. But yeah, as long as you're not being foolish. It's just like living in the city, honestly. As long as you're not being foolish, you're going to probably be all right.
Okay. So what happened next?
So after Florida, we moved to Illinois by way of a trip to New York for my dad's, I think that was his 10-year college reunion. We drove up to New York. We camped along the way, and then we drove out to St. Louis. We lived in Fairview Heights, Illinois, right across the river. Mm-hmm. My dad was working in St. Louis with the Army Corps of Engineers. And yeah, Illinois was cool. We lived in a new house, and my dad liked to joke that they had used all the topsoil in everybody else's houses because our backyard was just full of weeds.
Wow.
There were weeds taller than I was, and we spent a lot of time trying to fix that up. And then while we lived in Illinois, my dad deployed to Iraq, which is the first deployment that I actually remember. Mm. And let's see, my grandpa, Gross, sent us a playground, mm-hmm. little thing that we could set up in the backyard as kind of a, hey, your dad's gone, but we love you guys.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
So was that like an indefinite thing, or was there a certain amount of time that his contract said he could be deployed?
So that one was 6 months. But when he came back, we built a fence, and he brought us hats that had, so Jake and Justin got hats with scorpions embroidered on the tops of them, and then their names mm-hmm. on the front in Arabic, and me and Holly got ones with camels on the tops and our names on the front, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the army camo style. We were like, yeah, we're just like Dad. This is so cool.
That is funny. Ryan is flying out tonight to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I'm like, hey, bring me something. And then whatever he said he was going to bring was so, oh yeah, he said, oh, I'll bring you some Texas beef jerky. I'm like, you know, and that's the last thing that I want is beef jerky.
But really? No way.
I'll take a cool hat. We'll see. I asked him to go. I said, how far away are you going to be from Waco? Because I kind of like Chip and Joe.
Yeah.
But he's probably too far. Yeah. But anyway.
Texas is a big place.
Yes, it is. All right. So how was life without Dad?
It was weird. In hindsight, it seems brief. Mm-hmm. But it was always weird when Dad wasn't around. Just because my parents work together so well. And so it's strange to be without my dad.
Mm-hmm. You're like a really close-knit family, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because you also haven't really mentioned any other family around. Where was your, like, extended family?
Yeah. So my dad's extended family is almost all up in Minnesota. So that's where he's from. His family, various parts of it, immigrated almost directly there. So my great grandpa, Frederick Gross, mm-hmm. came over from Prussia in the 1800s and rescued my great grandma from the Indians, and they got married, and the rest is history.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And he had family up there who were in politics and in the hotel business and in, I mean, all sorts of things, in law. But yeah, so my grandparents are up there, my Grandpa Marlon and my Grandma Sarah. And that's actually on the list under honorable mentions of where I grew up, Maple Grove, Minnesota.
I love that name. You said Marlon?
Mm-hmm. Marlon.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's great. He's very competitive.
Like, even to you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. When we were... So, I don't know. Have you ever played cribbage?
No, but I know what it is. Yeah.
A card game. Yeah. So, when we were kids, there's a rule in cribbage called muggins, where if somebody doesn't count their points correctly and you see that they've made a mistake, mm-hmm. once they're done, you can count those points as yours.
Okay.
So, hey, you missed this 15. I'll take those 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
When we were children and learning to play cribbage, we would miscount our points. And so Grandpa would be like, all right, those are my points now. And he'd be like, oh, okay. So my mom and dad actually had to sit him down and be like, Marlon, you can't do that. They're children.
So when would you get to say muggins?
Muggins is, that's what it's called when you steal somebody's points.
You don't get to say it,
no.
No fun.
I mean, you can, I guess you could just say, muggins, I'm stealing your points. Like, I'm mugging you.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. My head went right to Elf, like cotton-headed Ninny Muggins.
Oh, Ninny Muggins. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Marlon.
And Sarah. And Sarah's wonderful. She's my grandma. But she's actually my step-grandma because my dad's mom died right before my oldest brother was born. And so I never actually got to meet her, but she's my namesake. I was given her name as my middle name. Because I was born on her birthday.
Okay.
And then she has that name because she was born on her aunt's birthday. And I think that's as far back as it goes. But yeah.
So
yeah.
How long were you actually in Illinois?
Illinois.
Did that last?
2 years.
Okay, no.
Maybe. Maybe not even that long. I think 2 years. Yeah. And then we moved to Kansas.
Right in the middle.
Yeah, right in the middle. And Kansas was pretty cool. Let's see. We moved to Fort Riley. My mom was pregnant with my brother, Jeshua. And very soon after we moved in, like, we didn't have our boxes unpacked. She went to a doctor's appointment and they were like, hey, it's time. And she's like, what do you mean it's time? And they're like, well, you're out of amniotic fluid, so it's time.
Oh, no.
So she called my dad and she's like, hey, it's time. And he's like, oh. And so he enlisted some of our neighbors that we barely knew to make sure that none of us burned the house down.
Yeah.
And then he went to the hospital and they brought home my little brother, Jeshua.
So are you less than 10 still?
I am. I'm at this point 9, I believe, okay, when Jeshua was born. Yeah.
And how long did you rock Kansas?
Kansas was 4 years. So 3 at Fort Riley and then 1 at Fort Leavenworth.
Okay.
Fort Leavenworth is the site of the, well, two things. It's the Army prison and the Command and General Staff College. So if you want, if you are a major and you want to do a higher rank, then you usually have to attend that kind of school where it's like, hey, this is how you do these kinds of things that you're going to have to do at this higher rank, mm-hmm, and you can make connections. And the one at Fort Leavenworth is pretty cool because it's one where majors from around the world actually come to learn these same skills and also network with each other.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, so we had some friends from there who were Korean who we got to socialize with a little bit, which was really neat. They had a son who was a little younger than me, I think about Justin's age, and they taught my mom to make some Korean food and went over to their house and I tried green tea and I was like, oh, I don't really like this, but I'm going to drink it to be polite.
Good job.
Yeah.
So those were some tender years there, mm-hmm, in Kansas. Mm-hmm. Were you a sensitive kid? What kind of kid were you?
Oh, so sensitive. Unnecessarily sensitive.
You were sensitive.
Oh, yeah. 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 I was quiet, but I was sensitive. I would... Like, I would do things like if I dropped a ball instead of catching it, I'd say, ow. My dad'd be like, why are you saying ow? Yeah. That doesn't hurt. And I'm like, oh, you're right. I probably shouldn't say ow if it doesn't actually hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, if I would get into arguments, I would cry. Let's see. I think that was around the time I started babysitting my siblings. When you're on post, I think the rule was that you have to be 12 to watch other children that are your siblings. And I wasn't 12, but Jake was 12. so we had a system worked out where I would be in charge, but he would be my my backup.
Mm-hmm.
So if ever...
Lieutenant.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. enforcer, maybe? He was great. He was a great brother. I would take care of things. But then if ever Justin or Holly or whoever was like close to making me cry, he would come in and be like, what are you doing? Can't believe you. And
yeah,
get in their face until everybody chilled out a little bit, which was, it worked.
Yeah. It were was you good. Bossy older sister?
No, I wasn't bossy. I didn't need to be usually because I could just suggest the correct course of action and everyone would be like, yeah, okay, let's do that.
Great. So would you like kind of just watch everybody, or were you the kind of sister that's like, hey, let's go do this. I have this craft, or let's play this game. I feel like when Ava watches kids, she's like, let's do this. And
with other people's kids, absolutely, I will do that. Mm-hmm. With my siblings, usually if we were going to do something, it was playing a game, like an imaginary game, mm-hmm, out on the trampoline or with sticks in the yard. I liked to do crafts, but my siblings weren't always super into crafts. Me and Justin would color together. Like, we would draw pictures. But no, we didn't do... I didn't plan activities for us to do beyond watching a movie and eating grilled cheese.
Grilled cheese. Yeah. Legit.
Oh, yeah. Or mac and cheese. Or quesadillas. Or nachos. We love our bread cheese combos.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, so... You said you're not 12 yet.
No.
What grade are you in school? I'm trying to...
Ooh, I was homeschooled, so I do not know.
Yeah, it gets a little muddy.
It gets a little muddy. I didn't have a firm grasp on what grade I was in, I think, until like middle school, like 13 years old.
What subjects did you gravitate towards?
Oh, gosh. I really loved logic puzzles. We did like explode the code and other like pattern finding. We did fallacy detective. I remember really enjoying
that. Yeah, with the dog.
I loved those. I loved to read, too. I could disappear into a book.
Okay.
Yeah. Just get so focused that I couldn't hear anything around me.
Do you remember some early books that you read that kind of just ignited your love for reading?
Let's see. I think, so the first chapter book I read was Nancy Drew when I was 5, I think, and read through just a lot of those. And then there's a lot of those. I didn't read all of them, but actually by the time I was 8 turning 9, I had decided I was too old for Nancy Drew. because I could figure out what was going on.
Oh, yeah, true.
And I was like, it's always the same. They just, they have a mystery and then they talk about it and then they go somewhere and then they solve it and then it's over. And unfortunately, I decided this right before my birthday and my grandma, my mom's mom, sweet, sweet grandma, had already purchased Nancy Drew books for my birthday.
Yeah, I loved them. I read every one and I just would be curious to go back and see.
If they hold up.
If they hold up, yeah. So that didn't grip you, so that doesn't count. No. So what books?
A Swiss Family Robinson, okay. I think, was the first one where I was like, this is really cool. I want to do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And The Hobbit, I remember I read that pretty young too, 8 maybe.
Who got these 9. Books for you? Were your parents big readers and they were just around the house?
Around the house, yeah. My parents both enjoy stories. My dad's not a big reader, but he wants us to be big readers. He gave me and Jake and Justin a book list in high school. Like, these are some books that you should read. And we were like, have you read all these? And he's like, that's not the question. but there was always books around. Sometimes I ended up reading things just because they were there and I was bored.
Mm-hmm.
Hinds Feet on High Places. I would probably have never sought that out at like the library. But
mm-hmm.
It was there and I was bored. So,
book. Yeah. What could you do in Kansas?
Well, in Fort Riley, there was a kind of a valley right out the back. So we had a yard and then, 20 feet, 30 feet from our back stairs, it would just sharply dip and there was a flat area. And we would go down there and play with sticks and the other neighborhood kids. And then there was a river close by. There was a culvert, maybe 3 or 3.5 feet high. If you go through the culvert under the road and then walk along that ditch for like half an hour, you would reach the river. And we would go there sometimes with an adult, usually, and dig in the mud. And I found this funky looking bone thing that I still have. I think it's probably like a cow or a buffalo spine piece.
Interesting.
I haven't actually put in the work to figure out what it exactly is. I just like how it looks. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a cool thing. And then when I was playing with Justin, we found some... a musket ball and a rifle bullet, like Civil War era.
Very cool.
Yeah. There were pear trees next to the main post chapel. The ditch behind our house went down and then it went up again. And that hill was where the main post chapel was. And there was a cluster of 3 pear trees. We would go there and climb them and pick the pears and bring them home and put them in the fridge.
That's very fun.
It was good. And then there was tornadoes because Kansas.
That's not very good.
That was my favorite. It was so cool.
Tell me why.
It was so... awesome. So storms to me are such a clear like example of the way that God displays his power and his care too. Nothing happens outside of the control of God. We believe in a God who's sovereign and in control. And every time I'm in a storm, I'm like, wow, God is so big and powerful.
Yeah.
And he could wipe me away in an instant. And he's showing me he's not going to. Right here, and again here, and again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a tornado siren in Kansas, everywhere. On post, they would test it every day at noon. So every day at noon, tornado siren goes off. Okay, great, time to go in for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
We would use that as our end of recess siren.
Right.
Yeah, but if it sounded and the sky was green, it's like, oh, there's a tornado, great. Right. So we would go down into the cellar and wait until the siren went off again, and... But sometimes we wouldn't wait until the siren went off again. Our dad would be like standing up by the storm door and, hey, come on up here. And we would come up and we would be able to watch the wind whipping the trees around.
Wow.
And we got to watch a tree get torn down in our front yard. So when we started out in that house in Fort Riley, we had 4 trees in our yard. And when we left, we had 1. 2 got torn down by a wind and 1 got struck by lightning.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But the one...
Don't leave your bike outside.
No, absolutely not. Won't be there. But we watched a tree that just, like, it got whipped all the way down to the ground on one side and then popped back up because it's a tree. It's flexible. It can do that. And then whipped all the way down on the other side.
It's incredible.
It popped back up. And then a few more times that happened. And one time it just didn't pop back up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did it go?
It just lay there on the ground.
Oh, okay.
It had just been at the base, like, torn... Mm-hmm. Torn off, which was so impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet. I'm thinking of a scientist that the kids and I read a biography on last year, Robert Boyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think storms are what caused him to trust Christ as well, like from watching them as a young kid.
Yeah.
In a similar way. So at this point, did you believe in God?
Yeah. So
maybe that's why you weren't afraid.
I wasn't afraid.
Because
no.
You knew him. Yeah.
I remember the first time I thought about God, or the first time I remember thinking about God was when I was 4. And my older brother Jake had come to me with this announcement, like, hey, if you don't trust in Jesus, you're going to go to hell. You should trust in Jesus. I've already trusted in Jesus 5 times.
Did your parents send him?
No.
Oh, 5 times.
No, 5 times. And I was like, oh, man, I haven't even trusted in Jesus 1 time. I should get on that.
And that's your story? Your salvation story?
No, there's more to it than that. But that is the first time I thought about it. When we lived in Florida is when I got baptized, and I talked to my parents, and they'd been like, yeah, this Jesus thing is pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
And I think that's, I think it's probably different for every kid, but the understanding piece of knowing that you're somebody who can't do it, like who can't get from where you are now to where you ought to be, that you need help, is the first piece in being a Christian. Is just knowing that you need help. So
help, yeah.
Yeah. I knew I didn't want to go to hell. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if there was an option, I wanted that. So always a part of our lives. I grew up going to church. Wherever we were, we went to church. And we would always be involved to some degree in serving. That's part of how the military Christian community works, is that you don't get to have deep roots for very long. So you plant deep roots as quickly as you can.
Gotcha.
Wherever you are. And part of that is by serving in the church. And I remember just believing that God could do anything, especially when I was like, gosh, I was maybe 6 in Florida, and I just had horrible nightmares. Mm. And I was afraid to go to bed, and I was just like, all right, well, if anybody can do anything about nightmares, it's God, because I know that mom and dad can't do anything about nightmares. So I prayed. I was like, God, please take away my nightmares.
Yeah.
And he did. I've had some weird dreams, but I haven't had a nightmare since then.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
Back into Kansas. So
yeah.
What did the church look like in that particular community?
So we went to the Main Post Chapel in Kansas.
With the pairs.
We briefly went to a house church, and then they were a little bit culty, so we were like, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stopped taking piano lessons, and then we went to the Main Post Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went there initially, it was, I guess, more Anglican, like more Episcopalian than anything else.
What should I be imagining in my head? Because I really do not have any frame of reference.
Sure, yeah. So this Main Post Chapel was a limestone building, so pale, whitish, tannish stone.
Okay.
Big blocks. A big, round stained glass window at the front that had been replaced several times because tornadoes. Actually, every family that left the Main Post Chapel got a little rectangle shaped like Kansas of stained glass framed to take with them, because window keeps breaking, we might as well make use of the glass. Dark wood pews, dark floor. I don't remember if it was carpeted or what, but it was dark.
Was it very big?
It was
were there a lot of Christians in the service?
It was, yeah, there were a lot of people who came. I don't remember if it was big or not. Honestly, I remember it took a while to walk down the aisle with a candle, and that I wasn't always
allowed.
Is that
your job?
Sometimes. Well, the kids would take turns walking down and lighting candles at the front, and I was not always allowed, because one time I joked that I was going to light Justin's hair on fire because he was carrying the thing in front of me. So one kid got to carry the cross, and one kid got to carry the candle lighting thing, and I thought that was very funny, and nobody else thought that was funny.
Is this the only option for a church on the base?
No, that Fort Riley was pretty big, so there were several different chapels, but that was the one that was really close to our house.
Okay.
We could walk to church, and that was nice. And we had some families there who were also homeschooled, which was cool, with kids in similar ages to ours. Yeah.
A more liturgical church would be what your parents would lean to?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
That just, after the slightly culty house church, they decided we were just going to go to the Main Post Chapel and we weren't going to worry about it.
Yeah.
In Illinois, actually, we had gone to a church that's kind of similar to what Remnant is like. And I don't remember, I think it was something like Covenant Church. And my parents had tried to look for a church with a similar name, thinking, oh, well, we'll find a similar church.
Mm-hmm.
And found the weird culty house church. And they were like, Chris, quit your job. give us all your money. It's going to be great. My parents were like, yikes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So after that, they decided that it was, all right, the safe option. The main post chapel is definitely not going to be a cult.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that one, which was vaguely Anglican. Then there was the Catholic one. There was a Lutheran one. And there was a, there was another one, but I don't think we ever went there. So I don't know what their deal was.
So what was being kind of formed in your consciousness about, yeah, God and being a Christian and what all that looks like?
I think it was formed mostly by the way that my parents interacted with things. So church was kind of a frustrating time for me because it's like, oh, I have to wear a dress and I have to have my hair down.
You sound like Laura Ingalls.
Comfortable shoes. I don't like it. Yeah. But at home, we would sing songs before bed, and we would always read a Bible story of some sort. And let's see, at that time, my parents had this little Bible that we would read through, and when we could show that we could read the entire thing, they would give us our own adult Bible, you know, like an actual, not a kid's storybook Bible, but an adult Bible with our name on it. And that was really special. Yeah. But I don't know, I remember singing with my parents, and I remember understanding that to be a Christian was to serve and to be like my parents were. I mean, loving and forgiving and kind. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lot of reference for what not being a Christian was like, just because I didn't have a lot of non-Christian people that I interacted with at that time. But I think it was a solid foundation of what it is to be a Christian. And I think that has become more valuable to me as I get older.
Was it hard to leave that place? Was it?
No.
No. Okay.
No, it wasn't hard to leave Fort Riley. It was harder to leave Fort Leavenworth. I had better friends there. But Fort Riley, I didn't have a lot of good friends my age. Just, it was really mainly me and my brothers. And it's the military. So even if I had good friends, they're going to leave soon too.
Sure. That's a good point.
Yeah. A lot of picking up and going.
So where did you go?
We went to Fort Leavenworth next. And then from there, we went to Virginia. So, let's see. We arrived in Virginia summer of 2009 after driving from Kansas. And that was that was a move we did ourselves, which made it so much more fun and exciting.
Mm-hmm. Are you in high school yet? Or
no, I'm 12. I'm 12.
Man, you moved a lot.
Yeah. I think 10 times by the time I was 15. I guess, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yes, lots of moving.
Where do you want to go from there? Do you want to go to Virginia, or is there something you want to share before? Is Virginia the last place?
Virginia is, yeah, the last place we moved. We moved a few times in Virginia, but that was where my dad retired. Yeah, we can go to Virginia. Leave Kansas behind for now with its wonderful storms. I do miss the storms, even still. We'll swing back out into the Midwest when we talk about White Sulphur Springs.
Okay.
But first, we got to go to Virginia.
let's go to Virginia. What happens there?
So we moved to Virginia, and we actually get to reconnect with some of our family friends, the Duhadways. They lived near us in Illinois, and then and again near us in Kansas, and then again in Virginia. So we got to live just a few houses down from them, which was really cool. Our parents are friends, and they have a daughter about my age and a son about my older brother's age. So we got to be close to some familiar faces.
Are you on a base then?
No. So now we're in the town of Burke, and my dad is working as part of the intelligence community in and around D.C. So
what happened to the water engineering?
You know, I don't think he ever actually used that for the Army.
For the Mars expedition?
No, so his design was not the one that won that particular competition, but the degree, if you are, I don't know if smart enough is the right word, if you work the system right, you can get higher education through the Army and pay for that by continuing to work for the Army. My brother Justin is actually doing a similar thing where he's going to study AI for a few years and get a degree in that. And the Army's going to pay for it. And then he's going to work for the Army for the few years after that as a way to kind of pay for that degree. So, but I don't know that my dad ever actually used the environmental engineering degree.
Did you ever have any funny experiments going on in your house?
No.
Absent-minded professor?
We actually, oh, maybe we do have to go to the back to the Midwest even sooner. So when we were living in Kansas, he was working as a simulations guy. So he would build simulations to help train soldiers. We got to go and see where he worked one day, and there were like Humvees made out of plywood with big screens inside of them. And we got to see the video game that he built that was based on one of the towns right outside Post, and got to show like the super cool 2005 era graphics on this state-of-the-art military video game to show guys how to, you know, how to place themselves and how to move as a squad and all that, which was much cooler to my brothers who were into video games than it was to me. But I loved the, I loved seeing all the stuff that they built that was like life size. And that's mainly what my dad did in Kansas. He was also deployed again in Kansas. And that was the long one. That was the 15-month one. That one was tough because by the time he got back, Jeshua didn't remember that we had a dad.
Oh, wow.
My sweet brother Jeshua is so, so much of a perfectionist. He loves things to be in order. And he loves things to be exactly the way that they are yesterday, again tomorrow. So when Dad got back, Mom had been driving the car this whole time. Dad gets into the driver's seat, and Jeshua starts freaking out, like, who's that in Mom's seat? And we're all like, that's Dad, buddy. We have a dad. So simulations somehow morphed into intelligence. So my dad worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency in and around D.C., and then he retired when I was 15, I guess, after becoming a lieutenant colonel. Which was pretty cool.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. The promotion ceremony was pretty funny, actually, because he had a general, one of his former commanders, come in and do the proceedings, and she was a really cool lady, but she forgot my mom's name. So she kept saying, oh, yeah, and Jill has been with you this whole time, supporting you, and Jill has been such a wonderful friend and companion. My mom's, like, sitting there. My mom's name is Jacqueline, just fuming, just, no who doubt. Is this Jill?
Looking at your dad like, with, like, raised eyebrow. Bummer.
Yeah, bummer, yeah. But, yeah, Virginia was interesting. It was, I mean, moving's always hard. I was excited to be close to my friend Ellie, and I was excited to... Well, no, I wasn't excited for much else when we moved there, actually. But it was good. My brother Jordan was born there the year after we moved. And I went to summer camp for the first time, which was awful, unfortunately.
Did it have, like, a title? Like, I have no idea what it could be.
It was called Camp Caleb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it was actually a part of Officers Christian Fellowship's ministry to military members and their families. They have two retreat centers, one in Colorado and one in Pennsylvania, and the one in Pennsylvania also does summer camps. So
lots of swimming and...
Yeah, swimming.
What
and,
else? Hiking?
Hiking, ropes courses, horseback riding, shooting, bows and arrows. I didn't like it because... So I was 13 at the time, and that's the oldest you can be to be part of Camp Caleb. It goes from 3rd to 8th grade. Mm. And a lot of these kids had come through and been like... going to the same Camp Caleb every year, and it's like, we're going to be best buddies, and then I'm there, and I'm like, this is the last year,
this
is my first year, and it's middle school, so everybody is super awkward.
Yeah. So did you kind of cling to your siblings?
That's the thing. None of my siblings were the same age as me, so they didn't go with me.
I see.
Justin was at the other group because he was younger enough that he was in a whole different age group at that camp.
Mm-hmm.
So I was siblingless and alone. And it was not fun. And there was a large wolf spider above the door of the porta potty, like on the inside.
Wait, what are you going to say next?
And the counselor refused to kill it. And I was like, well, can I just pee in the woods? And she says, no. And I'm like, well, can you kill the spider? And she says, no. And I'm like, okay, my only option is to not drink any water. So for like... 2 days, 2.5 days, I just didn't drink any water.
Oh my goodness.
And didn't go to the bathroom. And I was able to get away with it because my dad had loaned me his Camelback to carry my water around.
Oh,
so they, I wasn't carrying a water bottle that they could pick up and hold and feel or even see the level in.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of the assistant counselors finally discovered that I hadn't been drinking my water, she was like, how are you? Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I think they thought maybe I had like some sort of eating disorder or something. No, I was just really stubborn. They actually
so,
made
so okay,
a rule
that's
because
a trait. Let's peel back your character
sure,
here,
yeah.
a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you want to share?
stubborn to the point of foolishness.
In across the board?
No, just when I think I'm right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because I think I'm right a lot, unfortunately. No, there's people that I am willing to listen to, and actually I'm at this point in my life willing to listen to most people, but not willing to accept what they say if they don't have any good reason for it. So I'll listen to you, but if you're being stupid, I'm not going to believe you. And I think part of that is from all the good logic training, and part of that is just me thinking I'm right. I've inherited a wonderful, terrible confidence from my father.
Yeah. So you love like a clear path.
I do. I love a clear path, and I love a clear and defined statement.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to believe something, that's wonderful. Do you have any reasons for it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't have any reasons for it, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, what are some things that you actually got to do that you liked to do at that age?
Let's see. At 13, I liked to draw, and I liked to make stuff. I think.
Did you draw what you saw or your imagination?
A little bit of each. Okay. So I wanted to be good at drawing what I could see so that I could draw things from my imagination. But I've never had a particularly clear image of things in my head. Mm-hmm. So like when I'm reading books, I don't imagine the scenery.
Okay.
In fact, it takes me out of the story to imagine the scenery. I'm just kind of existing in the story,
mm-hmm.
and things are happening, but my mind has never been focused on the imagery. Actually, when I read books, I'll often skim the imagery because I'm not going to imagine it anyway. It's there, and I'm like, okay, we're inside. Awesome. That's what I need. Continue.
So you don't like adjectives?
I like them. I don't utilize them.
You don't see any need for them.
No. So I enjoyed drawing like remixes on things that I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
So like the main post chapel, I loved the rocks and the way that it was built, that it wasn't just rows of bricks, but there were rocks of different sizes and they were all arranged together. So I loved drawing that. And so that kind of brick pattern or stone pattern appeared a lot. And I loved colors. So I had colored pencils at the time, which I liked better than markers because, you know, the Crayola markers.
You can shade them.
You can shade them. Mm-hmm. You can't shade with Crayola markers.
Yeah.
I know there are some markers where you can achieve that effect, but not the ones that I had access to.
Well, if they're dried out.
If they're dried out and if you're sharing them with all of your siblings. So I loved colored pencils. I also loved making friendship bracelets. Again, the colors and the making of a thing.
Like those braided things
or
beaded
like
things?
Like knotted friendship bracelets.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. With embroidery floss, which comes in a million colors.
Yes, it does.
I also liked using my dad's tools to make stuff. When we lived in Kansas, I made a shield and a scooter, like a little, just
to
a
be
flat.
Used at the same time?
No. Separately. The shield was too heavy.
I see this really aggressive child with the scooter on the front of her. Wait, shield on the front of her scooter. Like,
no, that would have been
ramming
good.
Everything.
Oh, man. No. The shield was to be used in stick fights.
Okay.
And the scooter was to be used on the basketball court, but it didn't. The plywood I made it out of initially was a larger piece, mm-hmm. and I didn't know, but it had a fault in the center of it. So I grabbed the scooter, and the first time I was going to, like, run, and then throw myself face down, like, to slide along the sidewalk, and I hit the ground, and then I hit the ground. And oops. Ow. So then I took the casters off and sanded one of the edges, and I put both of them back on, and now I had a slightly narrower scooter.
Yeah.
It was still pretty fun.
That is really interesting that your parents would just say, go for it. Go ahead and build this thing. Is that just their personalities in general?
Yeah.
Just go for it?
Kind of just go for it. I mentioned that wonderful, terrible confidence that I've gotten from my from my dad, and it's kind of a I bet I can do that attitude. And they've always been very encouraging for me and my brothers and whatever we wanted to do. I mean, when we were kids, Jake started teaching himself guitar and piano, and my dad had a guitar that he would play for us sometimes. My mom had a guitar. Actually, they sort of learned guitar together to do worship band stuff together because they thought that would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake started learning how to play the guitar by listening to the radio and picking it out. And they were like, well, great. If you keep going, we'll, you know, get you your own guitar. And he's now an amazing musician. He can play so many different instruments. You can just pick him up and play them. And I attribute a lot of the things that we can do to my parents being so encouraging to us.
Okay.
Like, sure, go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have the thing where you would ask them, or you could just go for it and say, hey, I'm doing this thing?
Depended on the project.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. So I had to ask to use my dad's tools because they were his, not mine. But they did later get me tools of my own. I got, actually, right before my dad deployed, he gave me a multi-tool for my 11th birthday.
Is that a Swiss Army knife?
No, it's, well, Swiss Army knife is a multi-tool, but this was not, this was a Gerber multi-tool, a different brand. And it had pliers and a saw, a serrated knife, a straight knife, I think three different screwdrivers, a can opener, and a little pair of scissors.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was very cool. I still have it, although I I broke the screwdriver attachment trying to open a car window one time.
Is that the kind of thing a young girl walks around the playground with, swinging it around? Like,
no, it's the kind of thing the young girl walks around the playground with, strapped to her side on her belt, feeling very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I fix that for you? What do we have going on over here?
Let me just whittle this stick real quick. So many little cuts on my
fingers. Did you whittle
a
lot of sticks?
I did. I before I had a knife, we would rub sticks against the sidewalk pavement to sharpen them for our stick fights.
Mm-hmm.
But after I had a knife...
Sharpen for your stick fights?
You know, just makes it more interesting.
Oh my God. What were the rules? Could you jab?
Yeah. I mean, not at the eyes. Mm-hmm. Like, we generally... I don't think we had any specific rules, but it was generally understood that we wouldn't hit each other in the face or the head, and that if anybody started crying, we would all stop. And then if you got hit on the fingers, you would usually, I mean, it's hard to hold on to a stick if you've been hit in the fingers, so you would usually drop your sword, and then we would stop, because mm-hmm. you're not allowed to hit somebody if they don't have a sword.
And were you the only one with a shield?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the shield was very heavy, so it wasn't very practical. And I painted it, and then I didn't want the paint to get scratched, so mm-hmm. I didn't end up using it very much anyway.
Any helmets?
No.
Capes?
No.
No
things, capes.
Things on, no capes. Any things on your shins? Come on, you never got dramatic with it?
No. Justin had some plastic knight's armor that he would wear sometimes, but then he grew out of it, and we were like, well, we could imagine better armor anyway. Yeah. And usually we were not knights, we were spies or soldiers or space aliens or elemental creatures who could like walk on lava or something.
I kind of got lost. So you were in Virginia.
All right, you're right. Virginia camp. I'm stubborn.
Oh, you're still in camp.
Yeah, and then
dang,
back
leave
from
camp already.
Yep. Yeah, so we were in Virginia the longest time we were anywhere. We lived in a couple of different houses, and
that sounds hard, Hannah.
It was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did anything ever feel like yours? Did you ever feel like home? I mean, how?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, White Sulphur Springs kind of became a home, and Minnesota was kind of home, but no.
Yeah. Then in switching your grades, you said it didn't really matter. Like, how did you even view school? Was it, like, important to you, or did you just want to play around all the time, or?
I enjoyed parts of school, but I think, I don't know, it wasn't. It was part of life. It was a thing that I had to do, and a thing that I sometimes liked. There were parts of it that I always liked. My mom would read us books for history, and I always enjoyed that. But there were parts that I didn't like, especially as I got older and things got more self-directed, and I was like, I'm not really enjoying this math stuff. This science stuff is hard to understand. My older brother went to public high school, and I don't think that was maybe the greatest move. I don't think he had a wonderful time, but there were parts of it where I was like, man, it would be nice to have somebody who knew all about this, and their only job was teaching me this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it was cool. As a homeschooler, I got to like credit activities as classes in some ways. So mm-hmm. when we were putting together my high school transcript, I was the first of my siblings to graduate high school as a homeschooler, since Jake went to public high school.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of an experimental time for my parents, trying to figure out, okay, what does she need to apply to college? And one of those things was a list of classes, a transcript of some kind. And so they're like, well, what have you done that we can
record?
Right? Because
a
lot of things that I did were the kinds of learning experiences that are valuable, but not maybe easy to quantify. So we said that I had taken advanced home economics as I babysat and made food and learned to sew. I made a few of my own Halloween costumes, and we credited those kinds of things as home economics. Or I did basketball all 4 years of high school and before, and those were my gym classes, was mm-hmm. playing sports. And art classes were mixed between the ones that I was taking with other homeschoolers at a co-op from Mrs. Wittig, mm-hmm. is a funny lady, and was my art teacher and art mentor, I guess, in high school. And so I had double art credit because I had what I did with her, and then all the stuff that I was doing at home, making wire sculptures and jewelry and drawing and all the stuff that I was trying to do with that. And then
what else did you do in a co-op?
Let's see, we did science in the co-op. So my mom would usually teach the science classes for one of us, so she did biology with me, and I think we did chemistry. So we would do the reading at home, and mm-hmm. then the co-op day was usually our experiments day. So
okay.
In biology, we did dissections, which I thought were pretty cool. I didn't love the smell, but it was really neat to see the different, like, parts of the animal.
For real.
For real, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember this was before high school, but I remember we got to dissect a cow eyeball, and it was so cool to see the little reflective lens piece behind eye. Because that's the piece that humans don't have. That's why our eyes don't have that, like, eye shine in the dark. And animals' eyes do, is because they have that piece at the back of their eye.
And you saw it.
And I'm like, this is so cool. The rest of the eye was very squishy. But that part was really cool.
I'm glad you told me about it, because I'm probably never going to see it for myself.
You don't think you'll dissect a cow eyeball with your kiddos?
I will send them to Hannah's Science with Hannah. Extreme science.
Extreme. Oh, gosh. It will be extreme if I'm teaching people how to dissect cow eyeballs.
Hey, I will tell you what, though. Ashley Sparace brought a brain to my house once. So, and it was somebody's at some point.
A human person's brain?
Yeah. I don't know.
Wait, why did she have a brain?
When she was working at VCU, because she's super smart and does super smart things mm-hmm. with brains and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And so she just asked if she could borrow a brain.
Wow.
Yeah, it was not what I expected. It was just like, whoa, God, this is nuts.
Yeah.
Like your design, kind of like you're saying.
Right.
But I couldn't look at it really for real, though. Like kind of like maybe sideways.
Just kind of like a little side eye kind
of
thing.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a little squishy. I definitely am not cut out for the medical field. A little too squeamish for that. But yeah, as far as feeling at home goes, I think White Sulphur Springs became a place like that in a lot of ways, just because it was the same every time I went back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things changed and people switched out, but, you know, it was nice to be able to go back to a place and oh, this is the same, even though I've moved or I've changed, but this place is pretty similar. My grandparents' house was similar to that, too, where it's like, oh, yeah, I've been back here before.
Yeah.
And, you know, the decorations are a little bit different, but the bones are the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some things that you would bring from place to place? Because I imagine that your parents had you guys keep things pretty minimal, especially because there were so many kids. Or not really.
No. Probably not as minimal as we should have been.
Yeah. What were a few things, though, that you're like, I am not putting this in the Goodwill bag?
Oh, man. I have some rocks that I didn't label, so I don't know where they're from.
Oh. Big or tiny?
Small. Like less than palm-sized little mm-hmm. guys. I know that one of them is from Castle Rock, Colorado, but I don't know which one. And I know that one of them is from a river in Kansas, but I don't know which one. I don't know where the others are from, but I like them. I don't know. I connect things to memories, but not necessarily to places. I guess souvenir-wise, things we brought from place to place were like our backpacks. So my mom's mom, my grandma Gowden, she bought us backpacks, sleeping bags, and beach towels when we were born.
Okay.
It was basically her, like...
When you were born?
Or when we were very small. I always have had mine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my mom would sew patches on our backpacks from different places. We would get patches.
I love that.
Yeah. So it's a little threadbare now because I've used it for so long, but my backpack has patches from a lot of the different places that we visited. Up
that.
Through Kansas, which is when we kind of ran out of space on the backpack.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool because says the name of the place on there. I don't even have to label it. And then I can look back and be like, oh, yeah, we did go there. That was cool. Gosh, stuff brought from place to place, all of it.
Yeah. So is your mom working at this point, or was she a stay-at-home mom?
She was a stay-at-home mom. For as long as I can remember, she's been a stay-at-home mom. She's stayed and homeschooled us.
I can't quite trace the ages of your siblings. Is there anyone still being schooled?
Yeah. So my two youngest brothers are still at home. Jordan is 14, and Jameson is 10. So
she's still rocking it.
She's still rocking it. She's got 8 years
yeah.
until she'll be an empty nester, unless her and my dad decide to do a crazy hair and adopt or something.
Mm-hmm. You think they will?
Probably not, but I'm never sure.
So do they travel still, or have they stayed rooted for a while?
So they've been in Virginia again since 2022. So Virginia. And then when I graduated from college, they moved to Hawaii to do, my dad's company offered him a position out there, and he was like, Hawaii? Yeah, sure. And they were there for 3 years, and now they're back in Virginia. They do travel sometimes, my mom especially, to visit her first grandbaby, my niece Daphne, out in Tennessee with my older brother and his wife. And that's been cool. And they're, you know, we go up to Minnesota sometimes to visit family. But I don't think that they will move again probably until Jameson's graduated from high school. I think they like being in proximity to those of their kids that are settled down.
Mm-hmm.
Me here in Richmond and Jake in Nashville.
Yeah.
At least in general proximity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how often do you scoot up to see them?
I try and see them once a month if I can, if not more. Either they'll come down or I'll go up. They came down for church last Sunday, which was lovely.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. What kinds of things do you guys like to do together?
As a family, we'll do board games, or we'll do frisbee golf, or we'll watch movies. We like playing Dutch Blitz, and now I think we're all old enough and mature enough.
What, poker?
To get through Dutch Blitz without somebody crying.
Oh.
It has been a long journey, but I think we're almost there. Although as soon as I say that, now Daphne is going to come up, and now we're going to have to give Daphne a handicap so she can play with everybody and not make Daphne cry. And
yeah.
We're all very competitive.
Yeah.
So it's good to have activities we can do together.
So y'all have a pretty strong family culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And y'all are singers, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For better or for worse, but I think usually for better, because we're pretty amazing.
I love it. Okay, so you didn't really work other than babysitting growing up?
No, I did babysit. I started babysitting other people's children when I was 11 or so, 12 maybe. And so I did make a good bit of money from that, which was lovely. And then, let's see, in high school I started working at a place called Abba Design with this lovely couple from our church, Mauricio and Bridget Cerna. And that was a screen printing and embroidery shop. So they did t-shirts and jackets and hats and
how did you get that job?
My dad talked to them for me. He was like, hey, my daughter's interested in art, and you guys do art. Do you have a job opening?
Yeah, so were you like an apprentice?
Kind of, more like just help around the shop. So I was running the screen printing machines and pulling t-shirts off and putting them on the dryer and then clearing them out before there was buildups so that none of them got crispy.
Yeah. Were you excited to do that?
I was nervous just because I didn't know how to do it, but then I was excited. It was a really cool job.
Mm-hmm.
They were really, really kind, and I was working with some of the older, there were two other people who worked there, Kaya and Joey, and I thought they were very cool. They were both, like, quiet and older and good at sports, and I was like, I want to be just like you when I'm older, quiet and good at sports. And so it was a lot of fun. It was really cool to see how the machines worked and to just get good at being precise and quick. And then I was taller than Mauricio and Bridget, not as tall as Joey, but tall enough that I could be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
They were both very petite people.
What kind of shirts would you print?
All sorts. We did a lot of shirts for landscaping companies, shirts and hoodies. We did a lot of shirts for like 5Ks and fun runs, stuff like that, for VBSs, Vacation Bible Schools. We did some shirts for political stuff sometimes, or for, we had a big order of turkey trot shirts. Those were pretty funny. And then sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How long did you stay there?
A year and change, I think. And then I went to White Sulphur Springs after that initial wow, being a camper is horrible. I did another summer and was a camper for a week, and I was like, wow, being a camper is horrible. And then after that, I went up there to work and help out, and I was like, being a helper is amazing.
Oh, okay.
So I went out up there.
Did you kill spiders left and right?
No, actually, I went to help out in the hotel. So there were, for high schoolers, there were opportunities to help out at camp, help out in the hotel. Or for the girls, you could help out in the hotel with cleaning and setting things up and helping out with meals. And for the boys, you could help out with yard work,
mm-hmm.
mowing lawns and chopping wood and clearing trails. And then just generally being helpful when it was time to turn over the hotel portion of the conference center.
Cool.
Yeah. But when I was a senior, graduating senior in high school, I got an email. It was like, hey, you want to be a staffer for the whole summer? We need some help. So I was like, I kind of do want to be a staffer for the whole summer. That would be really cool, because when you're college age, then you can spend a whole summer there serving and helping out. And so I said, Mauricio and Bridget, it's been real. I'm going up to White Sulphur Springs.
Yeah.
And they were very gracious. Yeah. So I went up for the initial training week, and then I came back down and attended my own graduation party from high school. And I went back up there for the summer.
Cool.
Yeah.
What was your favorite part?
The people. It was a really small summer staff. Usually they had many more, like 10 or 20 more college age people, but there was a weird, like, in between gap between the people who had been their general summer staff getting older and moving on with their lives and people who were coming up being too young. Mm-hmm. And so there were only like 20 some of us. Mm-hmm. And so we got really close, and it was really encouraging and helpful for me in a secondary, like, okay, none of my siblings are here. Yeah. My family's not here. This is me. This is just me. And people either like me or don't like me. And people were very kind, and I made lots of friends. And I was like, okay, this is how I function as an independent person outside of my family, you know, because mm-hmm. we do have such a strong family culture, which is wonderful. And I wouldn't exchange it for anything. But there also comes a point where I have to be just me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That sounds like probably a very important time in your life, I'm guessing. Because time is flying, and we're not even at VCU yet.
Oh, no.
Let's go. Is the word introspective? I don't know. So let's just go for a juggernaut. Did you have any big obstacles in your life you had to overcome and lessons you had to learn? And then we'll go more on the positive side.
Yeah. I think biggest expectations was the biggest one, where I had problems with expecting too much of people and friendships and situations, and then getting super disappointed because my unrealistic, unreasonable expectations weren't being met.
Mm-hmm.
And actually that summer at White Sulphur Springs, I heard from a pastor named Chris Pleckenpole, and he was basically like, hey, quit having unreasonable expectations of people, and backed it up with scripture, and it was wonderful, because it was the kind of stuff that my parents had been telling me and trying to reiterate for me, but it's good to hear things from multiple voices, because I'm stubborn and dumb.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes a long time for things to sink in. So that started off my, just changing and trying to be expecting less, still hoping for good things from God, but expecting mm-hmm. less or nothing from people, because I can't place that kind of expectation on people and expect them to be able to bear up under mm-hmm. my unreasonable expectations, because all you get is either baseline satisfaction or disappointment. You can never get joy from that, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that's something you were dealing with since you were a young kid, or just sort of when you were older?
Oh, since I was a young kid. I think reading so many books about people being bound together by a quest and being the ride or die friends, and we've got to save the world. Mm. It gave me unreasonable expectations about what friendship looked like, mm-hmm. where I was like, okay, so friends are always ride or die.
Yeah.
You're going to save the world together, so you got to have each other's backs.
Mm-hmm.
And and I was, like 9.
Yeah.
So it's ridiculous. I was way too serious about friendship and everything. And I was, disappointed that people weren't immediately ready to go on quests with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say that, because recently I've been talking to Ava about mm-hmm. some books, because we're trying to read more books at the same time so we can talk about them.
Yeah, totally.
And it's easy to say, movies aren't realistic or TV shows aren't realistic. But even books, her and I have been talking, we're like, gosh, it's kind of just a bummer because you just kind of know at some point, I don't know, you know, they can only go so forth. I'm like, you know what, Ava, maybe someday I think you'd like biographies or autobiographies. But even then, they're not still, it's still not the real. And so like just maybe over consuming or like, I don't want to say living in a world that's not real. I don't know. It's not always helpful for living real world.
I think it takes a lot of discernment. And I didn't have that. Mm-hmm. And my parents couldn't keep up with how fast I was reading things. So they couldn't always like talk me through what I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to be discerning about what you're taking in from books without help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that that definitely set me up to have unreasonable expectations of people, which, you know, was hard.
So you love books about friendship?
I love books about adventures and friendship and, I don't know, fantasy. Things that made the world seem more fantastic mm-hmm. than I thought that it was.
What are some of your favorites as an adult?
As an adult, I love That Hideous Strength.
Oh, okay.
By C.S. Lewis. I love the rest of the Space Trilogy as well, and Till We Have Faces by him. I also really enjoy N.D. Wilson's books. All of his fiction I've really enjoyed, and his nonfiction too, but I especially liked the Ashtown Burials series, and he might never listen to this podcast, but N.D. Wilson, I hope that you finish the series.
Hey, the word on the street is John Rimmer knows him, so
there we go.
Send a message. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I want to say to who's ever not going to listen to this podcast. Steven Spielberg, please make Tintin number two.
Yes.
That's my adventure. Absolutely. I need to see finished. Yeah. Okay, so how about, what are some things that, looking back, you can appreciate now that maybe you didn't have eyes to see or you just appreciate them even more deeply now?
Singing with my family.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, my family as a whole, as I get older, I appreciate them more and more, my parents especially, but people get so awkward about singing, and I'm so glad that I don't have that because singing was just a part of life growing up, and we would always sing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a wonderful way to enjoy and appreciate life and celebrate and be sad, but also be hopeful and praise the Lord. And I don't know, it's a wonderful thing, and I wish more people would do that as a family and with their friends.
So share a memory with me about an example that your family might burst out in song, or I don't know, use that to enhance your going on.
Okay, so a funny one. Road trip. We're stopped. We just get off the interstate to stop for food, and we're going to Red Robin. And so me and Jake and Justin all sing the jingle, the Red Robin, yum. And we harmonize perfectly. And it's beautiful, and we've never been able to recreate it. But in that moment, we were one spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever use singing for like worship fellowship nights, or did you bring any other people in, or is this really a family thing?
Actually, we were the worship band at White Sulphur Springs for we were attending a retreat there, and my dad finagled it so that we got to go for free if we led worship as a family.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. Let's see, Jake and Dad both played the guitar, and I think my mom had like some shakers or something, and I was singing, and Jake and Dad were singing too. I don't remember if Justin and Holly were singing or playing instruments or what, but it was a fun time. Yeah, a lot of kind old people were like, "You have such a beautiful voice, darling," and I'm like, "Thank you."
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really fun. I wanted to ask you then, if that's the case with singing, did you actually learn any instruments yourself, or?
No, not because I was not given the opportunity, but because I'm lazy.
Okay.
Yeah, and not inclined. So we had piano lessons when I was younger, and I did okay in the piano lessons. And then we moved to Kansas, and we started taking piano lessons at that creepy house church with the daughter of the creepy house church pastor. And then we were like, oh, this is a cult. And then I stopped taking piano lessons.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You're like, yes.
Yes. I mean, at the time I didn't care, but now I'm like, man, it would have been cool if I had stuck with that. And my parents wanted us all to learn instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to practice. I wanted to read or draw or make stuff. I didn't want to learn to read music, and I probably should have, and maybe at some point I will, but
I know some Russian, though.
I know a little bit of Russian.
Hey.
Yeah, I can pick out some chords on a mandolin. And I think in the future that's something that I would like to take lessons in and maybe be able to accompany myself.
It's a fun goal.
Because I love to sing. But yeah. But
what kind of song goes with the mandolin?
Bluegrass, mostly, which I enjoy singing but don't know a whole lot about. Mm-hmm. I could have picked an easy instrument, like a ukulele or, I don't know, a recorder. Mm-hmm. But it didn't seem cool. Mandolin seemed cool.
So, Hannah, was there a significant turning point in your life?
At all? Ever?
Yeah. Well, maybe more in this latter stage.
Oh. I guess I didn't see it like that then, but I did start having chronic headaches when I was, 17, I guess? Yeah, senior year. Yeah, 17.
Okay.
So I finished, I guess I hadn't finished playing basketball yet. Senior year of basketball, October, I start having headaches all the time, and I've always had headaches occasionally, like when I'm dehydrated or when I, you know, get hit in the face with a softball or, you know, silly, goofy stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But then I started having headaches all the time, and that was interesting, just being like, oh, I have a medical issue.
Yeah.
Because I'd never, my older brother is asthmatic, so it was normal to me for him to be like, ah, yes, Jake goes to the doctor sometimes. Normal. Mm-hmm. And I have glasses, so I go to the eye doctor sometimes. But that was a different thing. It was like, oh, I have a mysterious malady. I have to go to the doctor. Dun, dun, dun. So that was, I guess, a turning point. Slightly earlier turning point was learning that I could not get eye surgery, so I couldn't be a fighter pilot. when I was 16, my thought was that I was going to go to the Air Force Academy.
Okay.
And be a pilot. And
For real?
Yeah, for real.
Okay.
And I was going to learn to fly planes, and then I was going to, once I was done with the Air Force, I was going to join Missions Aviation Fellowship and fly missionaries into dangerous locations and go on adventures and be super cool.
I would say that adventure story.
Yeah, that adventure story. But I don't think it would have been good for me overall, but specifically to go to the Air Force Academy, especially seeing the way that the world has gone since I was 16.
Sure.
Being a woman in the military probably wouldn't have done great things for me. but I went to an ophthalmologist to ask about eye surgery and be like, hey, I've heard that they have this new laser thing they can do where they zap your eyes and suddenly you can see really well.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not that simple, but the military requires that if you're going to get that surgery, you have to get the more intense kind where they grind down the eye instead of the slice and then zap and then put back on. Because otherwise, in a high pressure, literally like you're up with altitude.
Okay.
If you do the slice method, the slice of your eye can just pop back off.
Is that for real?
Yeah. But if you grind the eye down and let it regrow, it's stronger. It's a hole still.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, sorry. But, but basically, I was told by the ophthalmologist, the eye doctor, is like, wow, you're really farsighted.
Yeah.
We can't do much for you.
Your glasses look normal. I don't see any of those, like,
I don't have, like, bifocals.
Yeah.
But my eyes, I'm very farsighted, but I also have an astigmatism, which means my eyes are a little football shaped.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, my eyes were still like changing. My prescription was still changing. And with the technology the way it was, he basically told me, we can't fix your eyes all the way, so you're still going to have to wear glasses. And with the way that your eyes are changing, you'll probably have your same prescription within 2 years. And that was super frustrating. And I was like, oh, I guess I can't be a fighter pilot.
So where does one go from there?
Art school. I was like, what else do I want? I guess I want to make stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I decided to lean harder into art and started building a portfolio to apply to art schools.
And you did that.
And I did that.
And
I got in, baby.
You got in. Yeah.
Unexpected. I was like, I didn't know, because I was homeschooled. I didn't have anybody else who was actually going for that to compare my work to.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it was pretty good. Yeah.
So what kinds of things were in your portfolio?
Some drawings and some paintings, and I added after portfolio day.
Wait, you didn't talk about painting.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't very good at it.
Okay.
I didn't like it very much. So I didn't dislike it so much as I didn't have a space where I could put it where it wouldn't get messed with by my younger brothers.
Mm.
So my youngest brother was born when I was 16. And so as I was, you know, junior, senior year of high school, there was an infant and a toddler and, you know, just little hands getting a hold of my art supplies if I mm-hmm. forgot to put them in a safe spot, or even if I did put them in a safe spot. I had a white bedspread initially.
Tie-dye. So,
yeah, so it wasn't necessarily that I disliked painting that as much as I didn't have a space for it. So I did drawing with marker mostly, and then I also did little wire tree sculptures. I wrapped around pebbles and just wrapped wire until I made a little tree. That was a lot of fun. And I did some pencil drawings of my mom, like from life, because after portfolio day they were like, you know what your portfolio needs is some life drawings.
Did you have Ryan at portfolio day?
I don't think I did. I had somebody from the photography department that I never saw again.
Yeah.
Even though I went to VCU.
But you did end up in his class because it would be freshman year, right?
Yeah. So freshman year, my first, very first class of art school.
Oh, really?
Okay, yeah, because it was Mondays and Wednesdays. So it was the first class I took. And I listened to him talk on the first day of class. And I was like, man, this guy talks like a Christian. But we're in art school. There couldn't possibly be another Christian here. And then I ended up wearing my Creation Museum dinosaur t-shirt to class.
There you go.
I was like, yeah, I'm not going to be weird about this. If anybody knows what it means, we can talk about it. And I can, like, tell them about Jesus or something.
Bold move, Hannah.
Yeah. Stubborn. Dumb. But fun. And Ryan saw my shirt and he's like, does that shirt reflect your beliefs? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, And then after class, he's like, can we talk? And I'm like, yeah.
Nice.
And he's like, I'm a Christian too. And I'm like, sick. And then Sam pops out of nowhere and is like, I'm also a Christian. We're both like, ah, lurker, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And that's how I met Sam and Ryan.
Friends for life. Sam Taylor, by the way.
Sam Taylor. What a good pal.
Mm.
Love her.
So what was VC like for your faith?
It was really interesting. It wasn't like, at no point did I think, Christianity is not for me, because nobody's been able to present any sort of even remotely compelling challenge to Christianity ever to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I was, I'm not going to be a Christian anymore or anything like that. It was more like, wow, this is really sad. I guess people really live this way.
Mm-hmm.
Bummer. And just being frustrated by the inability of my peers to have coherent discussion. So, like, I had, I went to RAM camp, which is like a, supposed to be like a leadership camp the week before classes actually start. And I talked to some of my peers there and they were like, yeah, I believe in reincarnation. Mm. I believe that we can, like, know languages because we knew them in a past life. And I'm like, oh, really? So you know a language? He's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, speak it. And he's like, I can't. I'm like, okay, so why did you bring it up? Just straight up silliness that I couldn't understand why people were believing these kinds mm-hmm. of things. So there was some of that, and then there was some of the, I guess, cultural pressure to do drugs or to be foolish in other ways. But it wasn't, again, it wasn't super compelling to me. I think initially the hardest part about being a Christian was finding a church by myself, because
mm-hmm.
I was like, I was trying different churches. I went out to InterVarsity because my mom really liked campus ministry when she was in college. And I was like, well, mom found some value in it, so I'm going to try it out, even though it seems like youth group for adults. And that doesn't seem like my jam.
Yeah.
But I went there and I met some wonderful people there, and that was cool. But when Ryan invited me out to Remnant, I was like, yeah, no, this is a good place.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are speaking truth clearly and sharing the gospel every single Sunday. And I think that's just fantastic.
And I remember that we didn't share at the beginning of the podcast how we met.
Oh, so yeah, that's right.
Was it at a community group? Had I met you before I showed up at my house?
I think it was at community group.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came with Sam and I, gosh, that was you guys' house in Carytown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I remember coming in and being like, oh, this is a lot of people in a small space.
Yes, it was.
It was. Yeah. So I don't think I said anything. I think you and Sam talked a little bit that first time and I was just kind of like wallflowering.
Yeah.
And not talking I usually did.
But you hung around.
But I hung around. I was a little bit intimidated by all the people because I didn't know anybody except for Sam and Ryan. But I was compelled by the prospect of getting discussion with people who actually knew how to have discussion. The reason I went away from InterVarsity was because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just I don't know, learning from people who are my same age, but got to learn from and interact with people who are actually older than me and potentially, you know, wiser and could give me good insight. And that was something that I wanted, even though it was giving up a sort of social aspect to being part of the college ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So by this point, are you feeling kind of, I don't know how to put this into words, but how you said you're such a unit with your family and then going to that camp sort of helped you spread your wings a little bit. Are you feeling that pretty much now at this point in your life?
Yeah. More and more at this point in my life, I'm feeling like, okay, this is who I am as an individual. And it was very interesting. It was different than who I am as, because there was a lot of responsibility that came with being an older sister that I somehow just immediately just, you know, did not have as a freshman in college.
Sure.
It's like, oh, I'm responsible for just me? Okay. This is weird and different. And I think that, yeah, that was weird and different. And I didn't like that super well, although I did enjoy being able to be on time for everything. But yeah, definitely learning to function as an individual
mm-hmm.
more and more.
So just as we kind of wrap up mm-hmm. this episode, though, okay, so how long ago was this from now?
Wow, 2015, so almost nine years. Yeah. Wow. So
anything you want to insert in that nine-year period that you want to pull out before we jump into your current garden?
Man. I guess really briefly before we continue, there was a time when I thought I had to keep moving because I just had moved my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of during senior year of college, I was like, oh, I could just stay here. I have a church with wonderful people in it who I can be friends with forever.
Yeah.
What? I can just stay here and keep being friends with these people and keep serving here and I'm not in the military. I don't have to move. Which when I say it out loud seems obvious, but mm-hmm. at the time it was just so much a part of who I was that it was just a given. I was just like, okay, well, mm-hmm. when I graduate school, that'll be the time. I know I've stayed in this place longer than most, but it'll be time to say goodbye and I'll just have to deal with that. And then I was like, oh, I don't have to say goodbye. Amazing.
Yeah.
And that's been wonderful to be able to look forward to continued friendship.
Mm-hmm. So what did you end up doing with your degree?
So initially I worked at a frame shop, so a custom picture frame.
Oh, what
frame.
Was your degree? Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Crafts and material studies.
Mm-hmm.
So woodworking, and I also did jewelry making and ceramics. So learning a lot about how materials work and respond to different things. I really enjoyed, woodworking the most, but close second was jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
Ceramics I enjoyed, but I had a hard time with one of my professors. So that's third of the three that I put my time into.
Did you make pots?
I did. I made some pots and some mugs, and they're a little ugly, but they're beautiful to me.
They are vessels.
They are. They are vessels, and I use them sometimes. Yeah.
Okay. So you said
you
graduated.
Graduated. Mm-hmm. And before I graduated, I had a part-time job at this frame shop with actually working with Sam, with my friend. And then after graduation, went full-time there. And that came with some super cool, fun challenges. It was lovely to work with Sam, but our boss was less lovely to work with, mm-hmm. very challenging. She didn't know Jesus, and so she didn't have the foundation that Sam and I did in terms of how we ought to treat people and how we ought to deal with emotions and with stresses and challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard to work with her, but it was really cool to work full-time and much easier for me than being a student, because I'd been a student that whole time, and somehow working is like, it's easier for me to see a return on my like investment of time and labor
mm-hmm.
in this. And that's really satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And got to hang out with Sam all day, which was great, my good buddy. And got to see a lot of weird art and a lot of cool art.
All right, Hannah. Oh, man, you have led such an interesting life. And I obviously can talk to you a long time about it. So
we could talk forever, but we probably shouldn't.
Yeah. Just have to talk some more later.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to share? And if not, would you please share with us just a lady that you want to honor and pray for tonight?
Yeah, for sure. I want to honor my friend Claire. Claire is an unexpected blessing to me. We were friends in college. We actually took a class together in crafts. Some jewelry classes, because she was a comm arts major, but she wanted to do fun little crafty stuff too. And while we were in school, we were friends while we were in class together, and then we didn't take another class together, and I was like, okay, well, I know how it is when people get busy, and I you know, I'm at this stage in my life where I'm not going to expect things from people, so if she doesn't want to, like, if we're not going to be able to continue making time for each other, that's okay. And I just need to trust God that whatever's going to be is going to be. And she wasn't a Christian, and she was really into swing dancing, and I wasn't super into swing dancing, but that was where she put her time. So I was like, all right, well, I guess we're not going to be friends forever, and that's okay. That's all right. That's whatever. I really enjoy spending time with you, but you can go your own way.
that's a song.
It is a song. I would sing it, but I'm holding back.
Restraining. Yeah.
But then, gosh, a few years after we graduated, I ended up working at Richmond Pro Lab, the lab printing part of Richmond Camera, and walking into work one day, who do I see but Claire? And I'm like, ah. She's like, ah, wait, I know you.
Yeah.
And we reconnected, and at that time, she was starting to look into religion again, and she was like, we ate lunch one day together, and she was like, you're my religious friend. And I'm like, oh, okay. And by the grace of God, she came to the Lord and started coming out to community group and coming out to church. And I've been so blessed by her friendship. So excited to keep getting to know her. So
what's her last name?
Her last name is now Newsome.
Yeah.
She recently got married to my friend Shadrach. So now they are one flesh, living life together. The real ride or die friendship, marriage. So, would you pray with me? Dear God, thank you for my friend Claire. She's such a blessing to me and to our church, and also to Stray Cats. Thank you for her stubborn kindness and thoughtfulness. Thank you for her always reminding me to look forward to things. I pray, God, that you will bless Claire with everything you got. I pray that you'll bless her at work, that she will work with creativity and kindness and diligence, knowing that in you, none of her labor is in vain. Everything that she does for the least of these is done towards you. And I pray that you'll bless her heart. Help her to be full of your peace that passes understanding, because she has a firm foundation in you, and therefore, she cannot be shaken. Please fill her with your love and persevering strength so that she doesn't grow weary of doing good. Thank you, God, for my friend Claire, who I get to grow with and get to know better for the rest of forever. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Whole Home Podcast, a podcast that displays the unity of sisters in the local church and the way God so wonderfully gives us to each other in our uniqueness and in our sameness for His glory. The stories we share weave together as one grand testimony to the work of Christ and His faithful presence in the garden of our lives. Remember, the Master Gardener is always at work, so let's yield to Him and grow where we're planted.